Welcome to the TurfNet Renovation Report, sponsored by Gulf Preservations, the Green Drainage Specialist. I'm Anthony Pioppi, your host, and joining me today is Len Curtin, the golf course superintendent at George Wright Golf Course in Boston. Welcome to the show, Len.
Hi, Tony. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
George Wright just underwent a restoration, but this is a municipal golf course that receives a lot of play. But even before that, I want to get into that. This is quite the project. When it was built, opened in 1938, it was estimated to have cost $1 million at the time. 1,000 men a day were working on it. There's 57, according to the website, 57,000 linear feet of drainage pipe, 72,000 cubic yards of dirt, and 60,000 pounds of dynamite were used to excavate the ledge. That is just amazing. And you have some other statistics about the stone wall, for instance?
Yes, it really was quite an engineering feat. It was part of the Works Projects, Works Progress Administration, WPA project, in back during the FDR years, to get, you know, get people back to work. So yes, there were like 1,000 men a day out there, but basically, Tony, what it was the property was so prohibitive to build a golf course. There was so much ledge and granite and pudding stone that they had really had to blast the golf course out of rock to build it. So, you know, using a lot of this rock to do drainage in low areas and such, there was lots of it left over. So there's a bunch of stonework on the golf course, there's stone walls that are incorporated into tees and stuff. But there was so much of it, they built a stone wall that pretty much goes around the entire piece of property. It's about, you know, depending on the location of it, it's anywhere from 4 to 5 feet high.
Oh, no kidding.
There's a chain link fence. Yeah, a chain link fence built right into the wall. It's about 4.5 miles long. And it was all Irish and Italian masons that built it. It's a phenomenal feat of engineering, and it's still there today.
Amazing. Now, this was a Donald Ross course, but construction stopped because of the Depression or the market crash. And then in 1932, Walter Irving Johnson, who was one of Ross's construction superintendents, became an engineer for the MDC. He took over the project, or he was the lead guy on the project.
Yes, that's exactly right. From what information and history that we've been able to piece together, it was originally going to be a private golf club, a private country club, but the original finance people had lost their money during the crash of 29. The property was left to the city of Boston, a huge piece of property, big chunk of land, and they really didn't know what to do with it, but they had a design. They had a golf course design from Donald Ross that came along with the land. And so it just so happened that Walter Irving Johnson was building Ponke down the street at the time. And from what I understand, they approached him to take on the project once he was done finishing up his work at Ponkapog.
Okay. And so the final total for the construction is $1 million. And you told me in today's day and age, if we were to kind of do the exact same golf course, the exact same way, what did you say the total would be about?
Well, you know, the estimate was done by the Donald Ross Society a few years back, and figured it was somewhere around $150 million to build it. Just a number that's hard to wrap your head around for a golf course construction project.
That's insane.
If you see the stonework and the clubhouse, you know, you could understand how that could come about, and the very fact that it took, 7 or 8 or 9 years, whatever it was, to build.
Right.
Just, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to see it happen.
And it was built to Ross's plans, correct?
That's right. Yeah, it really was. And we have, we still have in the archives, we have his original drawings and all the drain drawings. There were some things that he put on the drawings that really didn't get done. A couple of things here and there, a bunker here, a tee there. As they went along, they didn't do them. But it's really neat to see where the original drawings for the bunkers were, and how they were going to be shaped and cut into the green banks and such. Really, very, very interesting stuff.
Right. No, absolutely. And you're a municipal golf course, and in a day and age where a lot of municipal golf courses are struggling. You are the complete opposite.
Yeah, you know, it's funny how that sort of happened. Like the city decided, around the time they hired myself and our golf pro Scott Allen, that they had done a ton of work at Franklin Park, and George Wright had been neglected for a long, long time, and they wanted to put some money into.
And I just want to point out that Franklin Park is the other Boston municipal golf
course. Yeah, it's also an incredibly historic golf course, second oldest muni in the country, from what I understand. But they had done a lot of work at Franklin Park, and they really felt it was time to start investing some money and some upgrading the golf course. The golf course was in tough shape, and it had been farmed out to a management company that left it in kind of some disrepair. So there was a. I don't really know if there was a real specific, like, okay, we're going to do this. It was, okay, let's try and hire some people that know what they're doing, that are golf people. And we started to improve the course sort of from the inside, from in-house, if you will. And then they started to do some capital work and upgrade some tees and some bunkers and put some drainage in and rebuild some parts of golf holes. Really needed it, and we're not there yet. I mean, we've been picking away at this for 10 years or so.
How long have you been at the course?
This is my 15th year. I started in 2004, so I'm actually working into my 15th year at the course.
And so Mark Mungem, the architect Mark Mungem, was brought on board when?
Mark's firm did a long-range master plan early on in the early 2000s, and they addressed, it was to address really safety issues and get car paths sort of straightened out and all that. But as we started doing some of this restoration work, Mark has really sort of dug into the trying to keep the original Donald Ross features of the course there, particularly when doing bunker work. And, we rebuilt basically our entire, so we had to raise it 2 feet because it was really wet and it had sunk, and established new bunkering and that sort of thing. So Mark's, Mark has done a terrific job in really identifying the things that we need to do to keep the golf course as original as possible while updating it for, 2018 golfers.
And who's doing the work when a bunker gets rebuilt or something like that? Is that in-house, or are you bringing in construction companies?
No, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, we do periodically, and we have done, a bunker here and a bunker there. My staff will redo a bunker when I have the labor to do it. But no, the capital work that we do on a yearly basis, which is most of the stuff that we do, that work has to go out to bid. So you're sort of at the mercy of possibly a low bidder, but the good thing is that we've got a group of pretty good, really good golf course restoration companies that are, within spitting distance of the area that frequently will bid on these each year. So it might be one of two or three companies, but we're comfortable with the work that they do and the restoration work that they've done, and they've done a good job of, staying on point,
Right. And one of the things I want to get into is how busy your golf course is, and how do you do this restoration work around the amount of play you have? I mean, did you tell me you're doing 40,000 rounds a year? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's between 35 and 40. We've been hovering between that number. This year might be a little lower because we've had so much rain. But if the counted rounds are somewhere around there, 37, 38, and then you got to figure that there's, I mean, if I had a dollar for every person that snuck onto that golf course and played it, I could have retired by now. So, we're probably around 40,000 a year. It's got to be pretty close to that.
And you have an insane outing schedule as well, right?
Yeah, we do. During the golf season, once we get to like the first week of May, it's not every single week, but pretty much almost every week. It's Monday and Fridays we have an 8 o'clock shotgun, and then Saturdays and Sundays are booked solid from like quarter after five in the morning until, four in the afternoon. So it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on our staff to get our routine maintenance work done Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday during the middle of the week. It's really tricky just getting your regular stuff done, but relating to construction work, generally speaking, they don't like to disrupt the golf course before October. You know, our last outings are usually the first or second week of October. So, you know, they don't really mind tearing the golf course up after that. But that becomes problematic because if you have an early winter like we had last year, you know, work grinds to a halt immediately. And I think it was right around Thanksgiving last year that, boom, that was it, you know. So then a project that you'd like to have done, let's say, in maybe 6 or 7 weeks, now is bleeding into April and May of the following year. And then, of course, it takes that area, whether it's a tee or a bunker or whatever it is, and out of play. You know, so you have the possibility of losing revenue, and it gets complicated trying to finish a project, and then, gee, well, you're going to get sawed down before it gets hot out, that kind of stuff. We ran into some of that this spring. With a project that didn't finish up, and it was really a weather-related issue, you know, just got too cold too quick, and then the ground freezes, and then you really can't push dirt around at that point.
Interesting. Okay, so let's do this. Let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
From greens drainage to sod work, Golf Preservations can handle your project with ease and give you the peace of mind to know the professionals are caring for your valuable golf course assets. Visit golfpreservations.com or call 606-499-2732 to talk to us directly about your next project.
Okay, we're back on the TurfNet Renovation Report with my guest, Len Curtin. He's the golf course superintendent at George Wright Golf Course in Boston. We're talking about this kind of piecemeal restoration to this wonderful Donald Ross course and it's how you do it when you have a municipal golf course. And one of the things I want to get into is who's calling the shots for you? Like, who is your boss within the municipality? So who's deciding which bunkers we're going to do next and that kind of stuff?
I mean, by rule, the I answer to the commissioner and the finance manager of the Parks Department is responsible for overseeing the general operations of the golf course, So he would be sort of the de facto general manager. His name is Dennis Roach. And he's been in that position now, I think, for probably maybe 8 years or so. So he, in essence, he has sort of the final say on really anything that we do that's finance related on the course. But we do have a committee which includes myself and the superintendent from Franklin Park and the two golf professionals from our two courses. And of course, Dennis, and you know, and then we have within the Parks Department, we have some project managers, and like we'll have a project manager that's assigned to the golf courses. Her name is Allison Perlman, and she's terrific, wonderful person to work with, and really, you know, she came into our organization not really knowing much about golf restoration, but she's done a lot of work within the Parks Department, you know, related to restoration work. So. She really caught up quickly, and so there's this group, and then, of course, Mark Munjam is involved there, too. So we put together, myself and Russell put together what we consider priorities, you know, the things that really need to be done sooner rather than later. And then then Dennis will have to try and figure out what we can afford to do, what we can afford to do each course. You know, maybe we put all the money into one golf course for 1 year because it's a big project, it's going to cost a lot of money, or maybe we've got some small projects on both courses that we can afford to split up and do the work on. So it's really it's sort of a committee kind of thing where we all have a say in it, and we just try and make the best decision that we possibly can. The good thing is that there's kind of so much work to do at both golf courses, and they get so much play, so these areas get beat up that we're never at a loss for work. I mean, there's plenty of work that's left to do.
And so the revenue from the golf courses then goes to if you make a profit, the courses make a profit, it goes to the Parks Department. The golf courses aren't their own separate entity, right?
Well, yes, they sort of are. The good and the bad is that, we're self-sufficient. I mean, other than the capital work, the two golf courses are owned by the city. So by rule, the properties are city property, and that includes the clubhouses, et cetera. So when work needs to be done on them, they sort of fall under they fall under city ownership. So when there's improvement work that needs to be done, that will come out of the city's capital fund. But the daily operations of the golf course, and including all of our payrolls, everyone's pay, everything comes out of the revenue that we generate. So we don't take tax dollars in that regard. We support ourselves. So if there is a surplus, and we cut the numbers really, really tight, as one of our old managers said, it's not necessarily about making money, but it's absolutely not about losing money. So we just have to make sure that we have a percentage of cushion in there at the end of the year. So there really isn't a whole lot of money left over for the Parks Department to take from us, and I don't think they do anyway. So.
And what are green fees at your course?
To be honest with you, I haven't looked at them lately, but I think during the week it's like $49 to play golf, and then they get you for $20-$22 for a cart. But that's, you know, whether you're riding single or you're riding double, it's $22. And then I think the weekends it's like $65. So it's really it's a pretty good value. I mean, it's a very good value. The best value around, frankly, is if you're a member. If you're a member, I think it's, don't quote me on this one either, I think it's $1,400 or around $1,400 for city resident, and you get both golf courses.
Oh, man.
7 days without any restrictions. I mean, it's a great deal.
Wow.
You know, and the courses are only about a mile apart. I mean, you can get from one to the other in 10 minutes.
That's really interesting. I didn't realize they were that close. For some reason, I thought, so, wow, okay.
Yeah, they're pretty close. I mean, they're a little more than that. They're probably a mile and a half apart. But literally, you go down one road, you take a left, and you're in the golf course.
Right. And how big is, we should talk about this in regards to doing restoration work. How big is your crew?
Well, you know, it depends. Like, to start with the year, our goal was to have 11 people. Like, that's 11 seasonal people. That doesn't include myself and my assistant.
Okay.
But through attrition and, you know, et cetera, we've worked most of the year now with 9 people. It's really hard. If you lose somebody, the hiring process, because you have to go through all kinds of, there's all sorts of navigating red tape to get a job at one of the golf courses, to be any kind of a city employee for that matter. Have to live in the city of Boston,
right?
So you have to prove that you're a resident, and then you have to have a background, a Cori check, all sorts of things. So it can take somewhere around 4 weeks from the time a person applies till they actually get hired. So if you lose staff sometime in June or July, they may not get on the payroll until August or September. So it's really tough to replace people that either leave or, you know, whatever, don't work out. So we have a staff of about 9 right now, but I'm going to lose a couple of summer kids, so we'll be down to 8 or 7 or 8 in the next couple of weeks.
I looked up online, your weekday rates are $45 and the cart fee is $20.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And your weekend fees, if I can get my computer work, I believe are $52 or $55. With the same card fee, so that's...
Oh, okay. So it's not as expensive as I thought.
It's a better deal than you imagined.
Better deal than I thought it was.
So with regard to your staff, like, say, beyond the golf season, so we get some work going in the fall, and you have a really nice, long, warm fall that allows you to do bunker work and do some sodding into December. Are you allowed to keep guys on as long as there's work for them, your seasonal guys?
There is some flexibility there. Like, if we have a really good fall, like you mentioned, and it seems like every 3 or 4 years you get one of those falls where it's 70 degrees right up until the second week of December, you know? I mean, we have a tremendous amount of leaf cleanup to do. So we keep at least 4 or 5 guys on until the middle of December just to clean leaves. But, there is some flexibility there. If we're doing well financially in the fall and there's some extra project work that we would like to, accomplish, we have that conversation towards, you know, we usually have a financial conversation somewhere around the end of September. And, you know, Dennis will give us a sort of a forecast, and it's either a good one or a bad one, you know. So then we make adjustments right. accordingly. So if we have to lay guys off early, we do. If we can keep them on a little later and knock off a few projects or do some stuff, extra stuff, we do it.
So in the last few years, including Franklin Park, what's the biggest project that's gone on a golf course? You know, as far as restoration or irrigation or anything like that?
I think the biggest one we've had in the last few years is we sort of rebuilt our entire first hole. Hole number one was a real problem. Holes one and two were the rock and stump dumps for the construction of the course. It was a real low swamp area. So they filled it in with blasted, it actually kind of looks like riprap. It's angular broken pieces of jagged granite. And then they covered it with topsoil, but they threw stumps and everything else in there. So all this stuff it's settled. And of course, anything that was organic has decayed over the years. So those two holes were actually lower than, it was a massive drain that went through the two holes. It was like this 30-inch piece of corrugated
really?
Steel pipe. I mean, we're talking a WPA project. It's like stuff out of the Hoover Dam they put in this place. I mean, the engineering was just unbelievable. You can crawl through the drains at George Rex.
That's amazing.
Two holes, the fairways had actually sunken to a lower grade than the drain line. So we were getting no positive drainage into those holes. So the first hole, every time we got an inch of rain, there'd be a swan lake in the middle of the fairway for 2 weeks. So we tackled that one. This is probably 6 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. And we completely stripped almost the entire fairway. We raised it up a couple of feet. We put in, I can't remember the number, but it's got to be 1,000 feet at least of drainage tile, and there may be more. We rebuilt the two bunkers. We rebuilt the men's tee. We rebuilt the greenside bunker. We added on to the back of the green and sort of rectangularized the green to sort of bring it back to its original rectangular shape. We did the two tee. We did all of the tees on hole number two. Had a fairway bunker and a green bunker on hole number two and large number two green. That was a big project, and we did some irrigation upgrades on those two holes as well. That was about, I want to say that was like $450,000,
right?
Something like that. It was worth every penny. The first hole is one of the best looking golf holes on the golf course now.
And you had to do this, all this post construction work and all that with this really small crew of yours, right?
That's right. Yeah. We don't, they don't give us any more people if we're doing construction work. So yeah, we have to kind of grow it in with who we have. Yeah.
And I want to also touch on this little piece of history. This year you became the first public course, which I find is astounding, to host the Massachusetts AM.
Yeah, that's right. And I actually didn't know that either, Tony. That was an interesting piece of information, but yeah, I mean, 110 years they've had the Mass Amateur, dating back to the 1890s, and it was never on a public golf course before. It was always in a private club. But we've had a very good relationship with what's now Mass Golf.
Right.
Over the past 5 or 6 years, they hosted a mid-amateur at George Wright, I want to say in 2013. Might be 14,
okay.
Either. I'm getting old, and I can't remember. The years are running into each other, but it's either 2013 or 14. It went really well. And, there's a lot of golfers from Massachusetts that have come, I mean, public and private alike, that, the last thing they would ever think about is going into the middle of the city of Boston, the urban neighborhoods, and playing at Donald Ross Golf Course. And
right.
Just the reviews we got of the course were fabulous. They absolutely loved it. And so we've had a really positive relationship with Mass Golf since then. And then they started kicking around the idea a couple of years later about having, the Mass Amateur and the Women's Amateur. We hosted the Women's Amateur about 2 weeks after the Mass Amateur this year. So
which is amazing. You did a Men's Am and a Women's Am in consecutive weeks. Not consecutive weeks, but in close proximity to each other.
Right.
And I know the Men's Am had never been on a public golf course. I don't know about the Women's, but that's quite a feat again to pull off with a small staff. Although you did have some the reinforcements came in for the men's end. You had 14 guys come in to help you out.
Yes, exactly, and they did. And, you know, the logistics of hosting that golf tournament was, there's so many people playing in it, and, you know, the time they go off in the morning, and they're going to the first tee and the 10th tee, and I'm looking at this going, how am I going to do this with 10 guys, you know, or 9 guys? you know, you're going to split your crew in half.
And right. Right.
You can be there at the crack of dawn at 5 o'clock. You still don't have enough time to get everything done. So fortunately, I've been doing this for long enough, and I guess I've made enough friends that and I got to tell you, our crew busted their tails, the 8 guys that I've got. You know, I never would have been able to do this without the 14 guys to help us out. They really, I can't say enough about them. And I'm there at like 10 minutes of 4, and half of them had beat me to the golf course. And I'm like, some of them live in Leominster. And I'm like,
yeah.
I got it. Now I was like, what time do you get up at 2 o'clock in the morning? I mean, they came through. They really did. They came through, and I couldn't be happier. But the trickier part was the ladies golf tournament, because we didn't get the volunteers. So we had to do that with our guys. And, that was a lot more difficult. It's just, you know, there's a certain amount of work that needs to be done, and the math just doesn't add up. You know what I mean?
At least they only went off one tee for that event, right? For the women's?
They did, yeah. So
I mean, that helped a bit, right?
In that sense, it helped a lot. Yeah, it really did. If they were going to go off the 2 tees, we'd never have been able to do that either. So so we were really fortunate that they did. And, you know, there was some carryover in the condition of the course. We had basically mowed the place to death for 2 weeks. So, you know, the grooming of the golf course for the ladies' golf tournament wasn't as hard as it was prepping for the men's.
And coming in for the men's tournament, I mean, that was an awful week. That was one of those weeks with over 90 degrees and high humidity, right?
It was. It was terrible. We had originally planned on starting to double mow and groom greens the week before the men's golf tournament. And it was so humid and so hot. And I knew we were going to have a really busy Saturday and Sunday before the men's golf tournament. Double mowing, grooming greens, and then you're going to have 250 golfers 2 days in a row. Going to be really hard to get on them, and syringe hotspots, and it just didn't. So we didn't do that. We just waited. We waited, and fortunately, the weather broke the Sunday before the men's tournament started, and the first round of the men's tournament was at Franklin Park. So we double mowed greens on Monday, and the golf course was closed, and we basically mowed the whole golf course. But we were able to start our double mowing and triple mowing to get the greens up to speed. It took us until about Wednesday to get any reasonable speed out of the greens. They were rolling about probably 10.5 by Wednesday, and then by Friday they were, you know, Thursday, Friday, they were rolling probably 11.5, and they were good. So just took us a little longer to get there, that's all.
Yeah, but like you know, we talked about before that you had to protect those greens because of the awful conditions the week before.
Yeah, you really do. And I mean, and we're running into that now where, you know, that 3 week span for between the men's tournament and then the week after and then the ladies golf tournament, we had the men's club championship in between. Yeah, I mean, we really stress the golf course out a lot.
Right.
And we haven't had any, as you know, we haven't had any recovery weather. This weather has been absolutely god-awful.
Right.
We've got some spots on greens that just really didn't, they haven't bounced back a whole lot. And, you know, that's what God created airification for, I guess, right?
And being built on ledge and all of that stuff, I mean, you must have some serious hot spots on your fairways and things, right?
We do, yeah. Yeah, between that and we have a lot of polyannual in our fairways. We've, you know, in the process of renovating the golf course, when we started doing this, like the fairways had never been aerified before, you know, ever. So, like when we were putting aerifiers on the fairways, we were pulling thatch cords out that were 2.5 inches deep. You weren't getting to topsoil.
It had never been aerified before you got there?
The fairways had never been aerified, as far as I know.
Holy cow.
No. Okay. So part of that process was punching a bunch of holes and getting grass to spread into areas that it wasn't in. So there's a lot of the original original grasses on the fairways, the original colonial lenses, a lot of them. But there's also a lot of pollen infestation, and we really haven't done any fairway restoration program, if you will, where we've really, you know, like aggressively aerified fairways and slice seeded them and all that, and try to change the grasses over. We don't have the time, and we certainly don't have the manpower in house to do it. But it really becomes hard when you get as much play as we do. So areas on fairways, you've got, like you mentioned, ledge, and then you've got all these POA areas that just get obliterated by summer patch and a few other things when you have a bad summer, and that's really kind of what we're going through now. So. No, we're pretty banged up, but it'll all come back. I mean, we'll get it all back in the fall, and we'll start it all over again next year.
But you know, the work is. I don't want to end on a down note, because everybody I've ever talked to who's played this golf course in the last 10 years or so, or 5 years, is just, and as the competitors did for both the Mass Ams, they absolutely love this golf course. So you're doing a fantastic job.
Oh yeah, no, don't get me wrong. I'm just I'm probably my own worst critic, and we're having this discussion in the middle of August in probably the worst weather year I've ever worked in my life. So everything's relative, I guess, you know. And we've never ever had a problem of getting turf to come back in all the areas that get a little banged up. But that's sort of the character of George Wright, and it doesn't matter really what year it is. We have three or four or five fairways that we've got ledge that are 2 inches from the surface of the turf, and the rock heats up, and then they go brown and all that. And
right.
it is what it is, you know. That's just part of the characteristic of the golf course. So you deal with it.
And somebody's been dealing with it since 1938, right?
Of course, exactly. And you know, some of the neat stuff that we found, like we found some aerial photos from the late 30s. And you can see where they, where the stone wall is going around the golf course. And the clubhouse is sitting on top of a hill. It looked, and there were no trees around it. It would remind you of the clubhouse at Newport Country Club, like sitting up on a hill and just...
Oh, no kidding.
Wispy grass around.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, there was just these rock ledge areas that were all covered with fescue and stuff. And you can see the stone wall, like, right from the aerial photos. And it's laser straight. I mean, you'd swear it's amazing, really.
Right.
You know, the workmanship that went into building the golf course is just outstanding. And, I consider myself very lucky to be part of it.
That's cool. And I'm really hoping that some point this fall, because I live about an hour and a half from you, I can make the ride up, and some friends and I have talked about taking a trip out and possibly playing both golf courses in one day.
Oh, you should. I mean, and they couldn't be different. They couldn't be more different. Franklin Park is kind of up on a knoll. It's an inland links golf course. There's very few trees. You can see, like, from the clubhouse, three-quarters of the course, and it's these rolling hills and grasses. Really neat, just a neat course. And then George Wright is like carved out of, out of the wilderness. And if you were standing at George, honest to God, if you stand at George Wright, in the middle of George Wright,
you would never ever know
you were in the city of Boston. You would have no clue. It's all giant mature oak trees.
I played George Wright about 30. I played it about 30 years ago, so I don't know it in its current, its current state. But even then, you just didn't. If you asked somebody, if you took a photo and said, "Where are you?" nobody would believe you're essentially in downtown Boston.
Yeah, and you are, and you're only a 20 minute ride. Right? You get on the commuter rail, and you're 15, 20 minutes into downtown. It really is. It's a quiet. Well, it's not sort of a hidden gem anymore because a lot of people found out about it. It's a really neat place, and. I'm a sort of a history guy. I like old cars. I like old houses. I like old stuff. And this is, in terms of golf, couldn't be a better place for me.
Fantastic. Well, I've been talking to Len Curtin, the golf course superintendent at George Wright Golf Course in Boston, Massachusetts. And thanks for joining me, Len. It was a very insightful and, I hope, for our listeners, entertaining half hour or so.
Tony, thank you very much for having me on.
You've been listening to the Renovation Report on TurfNet Radio.